There's this incredibly persistent fantasy about the business of modern audio.
Oh, the vending machine myth.
Right, exactly. The idea that you buy a decent microphone, you sit in a closet surrounded by like some cheap acoustic foam, you hit record, and money just, materializes in your bank account.
Yeah, the assumption is that you just put raw audio in and you pull out this highly lucrative lifestyle, subsidized entirely by meal kit companies and online mattress retailers.
Right, but when you actually look at the ledger of an independent creator, that linear equation completely falls apart. I mean, it's just,
It's structurally chaotic.
it is. It's totally chaotic.
Yeah.
So whether you are a curious consumer trying to understand the media you listen to every single day, or maybe a professional exploring new marketing channels, or, well, let's be honest, someone secretly plotting your own show in that very closet we just mentioned.
Which is a lot of people, to be fair.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you are about to get a masterclass in the actual plumbing of the audio industry. Our mission for today's deep dive is to decode the economics of this space.
Right. We are looking past the hype, past the massive celebrity deals to see how this medium actually keeps the lights on.
And our roadmap for this deep dive is a highly detailed July 2026 report called the Podcast Revenue Model Playbook.
Such a good report.
It really is. It was published jointly by the American newspaper and American TV. And what's great is it doesn't focus on, the art of interviewing or audio engineering.
No, not at all.
It serves as a systematic, almost clinical blueprint for how this medium functions as a sustainable business in the current economic reality.
Yeah, and before we even touch the monetization strategies, we have to fundamentally redefine what this medium actually is, like at a structural level.
Yes.
Because if you think of this space simply as uploading an MP3 to an RSS feed, well, the playbook argues you've already lost the game.
That is the central premise of the entire report, actually. A show only becomes economically durable when the creator stops treating the download as the actual product.
Right, the download is just the vehicle. Exactly. A download is a delivery mechanism. Nothing more. The actual business is a media ecosystem that coordinates six distinct assets.
Which are, let me make sure I have these right.
So you have your audience, your brand, your intellectual property, your community, your data, and your distribution networks.
Wow, okay.
Right? The audio file is just the vehicle. The business is the system that repeatedly creates attention, trust, and transactions from those six interconnected assets.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because treating a show just as a raw download is, well, it's like running a restaurant and thinking your core product is an empty chair.
That's a great way to look at it.
Right, like you could say, hey, I had 500 people sit in my chairs today. But do they buy the food?
Did they actually order anything? Yeah.
Do they trust the chef? Do they leave their email so you can invite them back for a private tasting menu?
Exactly.
The business isn't the chair. The business is the trust, the community, and the behavioral data you gather from the people in those chairs.
And the structural limitations of audio make that ecosystem approach totally mandatory. I mean, think about how audio compares to other digital formats.
Yeah.
So YouTube has a massive, sophisticated algorithmic recommendation engine, right? It's built for visual discovery and scale.
Right. It serves things up to you constantly.
Exactly. And a newsletter, well, that lives directly in the inbox. The writer owns that direct relationship with the reader from day one.
Whereas audio is notoriously opaque, it's incredibly difficult to search.
It is functionally invisible to traditional search engines. I mean, unless it's perfectly transcribed and heavily optimized with metadata.
Which most aren't.
Right. You can't easily skim an hour-long audio file to see if it answers your specific question the way you can with a blog post. But what it lacks in searchability, it makes up for in parasocial trust.
The intimacy factor.
Yes, intimacy and portability. You are literally a voice inside someone's head while they commute, while they wash the dishes, while they walk the dog.
Yeah, that's so true.
It creates a psychological bond that text and video really struggle to match.
But I do want to push back on how you leverage that bond.
Okay, sure.
Because the playbook insists that creators need to convert that rented platform attention into an owned asset, right? Usually by driving people to an email list or a proprietary website.
Yes, that's the recommendation.
But is that actually realistic? I mean, if the main benefit of audio is that I can listen while I'm driving on the highway, I'm definitely not pulling over to type in a complicated URL to subscribe to a newsletter. The friction just seems insurmountable.
The friction is high, absolutely, which is exactly why the creators who manage to bridge that gap are the ones who build durable businesses. You overcome the friction not by asking for a favor, but by creating an undeniable incentive.
Like giving them something they can't get anywhere else.
Precisely. You offer a supplementary resource, maybe like a visual guide, a deeper research document, or a private Q&A. It has to be so valuable that the listener actively seeks it out once they finish their commute.
Right, when they're finally sitting at their desk.
Yeah.
Exactly. The report argues that rented attention, meaning a subscriber base that only exists inside Apple or Spotify, is fragile. If the platform tweaks its user interface, your audience plummets. Owned attention, like a direct email relationship, is durable.
Okay, so since we are looking at this as a multi-asset ecosystem rather than just an RSS feed, let's dive into how creators actually extract financial value.
Let's do it.
The playbook outlines 12 distinct sources of revenue. And honestly, reading through this section, the most shocking revelation is about advertising.
Oh, definitely.
Everyone assumes the standard path is to just build an audience and then read ads for meal kits. But the report argues that relying on advertising is structurally the hardest way for a small or mid-sized operation to survive. Why is that?
Well, it comes down to the brutal math of CPM economics, cost per mil or the cost to reach 1,000 listeners. We need to look at the ad tech plumbing here. Most modern audio ads use dynamic insertion.
Okay, wait, let's define that because it sounds like a Silicon Valley buzzword. How does dynamic insertion actually work at the moment of download?
Sure. So when a listener taps play on their app, a server somewhere, milliseconds away, looks at their IP address.
Okay.
It assesses their rough demographic profile, checks the creator's unsold ad inventory, and literally stitches an MP3 file together on the fly.
Wow.
Yeah. It inserts a localized, targeted ad into the audio file just before it reaches the phone. It is highly efficient for the advertiser, but the payout for the creator is strictly commoditized.
Because it's purely a volume game.
Exactly. The industry planning ranges for 2026 show that a standard dynamically inserted ad pays between $18 and $25 per 1,000 listeners.
That is incredibly low.
Right. So if you have 1,000 people listening, you might gross $20 for that slot. Unless your audience is comparable to a small city, you simply cannot pay your rent on CPMs.
So you look at the alternative rivers of revenue, the playbook lists, right? Paid subscriptions, affiliate marketing, corporate sponsorships, knowledge products.
Yes, diversification.
But even with paid subscriptions, the report kind of throws a wet blanket on things. It says the typical conversion rate from a free listener to a paid subscriber is only between 0.5% and 5%.
It's very sobering.
Yeah. If I have 10,000 listeners, a 1% conversion rate gives me exactly 100 paying subscribers.
Yeah.
And it's a hobby, not a salary.
That low conversion rate forces a pivotal strategic choice. You either need a massive audience to make the math work, or you need to drastically change the economic value of your specific listener.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because the playbook compares the mass market archetype. So think true crime, pop culture, or comedy.
Right, the big general interest shows.
Exactly. It compares that with the B2B or corporate service archetype. And the claim here is wild. It says a specialized show with just 2,000 decision makers can economically crush a general interest show with 50,000 passive listeners.
It fundamentally redefines the value of an action. Let's look at the mechanism of the transaction here. If you have 50,000 people listening to a comedy show, the advertiser is paying for the chance to convince a tiny fraction of them to buy, say, a $30 t-shirt or sign up for a $15 streaming service trial.
Right.
The margin on those products is small, so the advertiser will only pay a small premium to reach them.
But if my 2,000 listeners are regional bank compliance officers or, like, healthcare procurement administrators, the math flips entirely.
What's fascinating here is that you aren't selling t-shirts to compliance officers.
No, definitely not.
You are generating leads for a $150,000 enterprise software contract. Or you're sourcing candidates for a C-suite executive search firm.
Oh, wow.
The lifetime value of a single conversion in the B2B space is astronomical. Therefore, an enterprise sponsor doesn't need to pay you on a $25 CPM. They will gladly pay a flat fee of $10,000 to sponsor your show for a month, because if even one listener signs a contract with them, the sponsor has generated a massive return on investment.
Right. It's like setting up a hot dog stand outside a massive football stadium versus selling specialized surgical lasers inside a closed medical conference.
That's a perfect analogy.
The stadium has 100 times the foot traffic, but the surgical salesman is going to generate infinitely more revenue from a smaller crowd.
Exactly. You monetize the quality of the action you can influence rather than the raw quantity of the eardrums you reach.
Now, we are talking about these models somewhat abstractly, but the playbook actually forces us to look at the ledger.
The cold, hard math.
Let's run the financial simulations they provided. The playbook estimates the typical operating costs for a professional, independent operation at $8,750 a month. And honestly, my first reaction was that this number is absurdly inflated.
It shocks a lot of people.
Right. If I own my microphone and my laptop, what on earth am I spending almost $9,000 a month on?
Well, the report is modeling a durable business, not a weekend hobby. That $8,750 covers a lot of necessary ground if you actually want to compete for attention against legacy media companies.
Fair enough. What's in it?
It includes a $2,000 monthly owner draw, so the host can actually dedicate time to it. It budgets another $2,000 for a dedicated producer and audio editor.
I would argue the $2,000 producer is the single most important line item on that budget.
Oh, without question.
It's the difference between a creator burning out in month three from editing fatigue and a show actually surviving its first year.
Exactly. It buys back the creator's time, allowing them to focus on content and sales.
Which you need to do to survive.
Right. The budget also includes $700 for research and guest booking, $1,000 for marketing and audience growth, plus the hidden costs. Server hosting, legal fees, liability insurance, CRM software for sales, and platform transaction fees. Operating a professional media ecosystem requires professional infrastructure.
Okay, so we have an $8,750 monthly burn rate.
Yeah.
Let's run their simulation for a show pulling in 100,000 monthly downloads. Now, in the cultural zeitgeist, 100,000 downloads sounds like the absolute pinnacle of success.
It sounds like you've made it.
But the math in this report exposes a brutal reality about what they call the potential versus sold inventory trap.
Let's break down the mechanics of that trap because it's important.
So you have 100,000 downloads a month. You put two ad insertion markers in each episode. Mathematically, that creates 200,000 potential ad impressions, right?
Right.
But you don't actually sell 100% of your inventory. Mm. The programmatic ad markets fluctuate. Mm. And the base case in the report assumes a realistic 70% fill rate.
Meaning 30% of the time, the listener hears no ad, or maybe just a house ad for your own show.
Just crickets.
Exactly, because the dynamic insertion server just couldn't find a buyer matching that listener's profile at that exact second.
Right. So now your 200,000 potential impressions drop to 140,000 actually monetized impressions.
Yeah.
We apply that standard $22 CPM. You take 140,000, divide by 1,000, multiply by 22. Your gross ad revenue for the month is $3,080.
And your operating expenses are $8,750.
I am looking at this ledger, and I am deeply in the red. Even if I manage to scrape together another couple thousand dollars from, like, a 1.5% paid subscription conversion rate, I am operating at a net loss. I have 100,000 people listening to me every single month. I am culturally relevant, and I am going bankrupt.
This is the core structural inefficiency of relying solely on programmatic ad models. The playbook calculates that if an independent creator relies purely on dynamic ads and a standard subscription tier, the break-even point to cover that $8,750 budget is a staggering 155,417 downloads every single month.
That is just an immense volume of human attention, just to break even.
It is. It's an exhausting treadmill. But the simulation pivots drastically when it introduces diversification.
Okay, how so?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, if a creator introduces just $5,200 of alternative revenue, so let's say a direct host read sponsor package sold for $2,500, a few hundred dollars in affiliate income, and a specialized knowledge product like a digital course or an industry report, well, the math transforms.
The break-even point plummets.
Yeah.
According to the data, by adding those direct audience products, the audience required to survive drops from over 155,000 down to just 63,055 downloads. You cut the required audience by more than half simply by changing the monetization mechanism.
Exactly. You transition from monetizing passive, rented attention on a CPM basis to monetizing the actual trust and authority you've established with a specific community.
Now, if the CPM math is a bloodbath for small shows, how does a creator actually secure that first direct sponsor? How do you get your first dollar without waiting 2 years to reach 63,000 downloads?
That's the real challenge.
Right. But the playbook lays out a very specific 0 to 12 month strategic roadmap.
It does, and the roadmap requires immense restraint. The first rule the playbook establishes is quite firm. Do not launch a Patreon, a paid tier, or solicit sponsorships on day one.
Which goes against every modern creator instinct. Everyone wants to monetize the launch.
Of course they do. But the report dictates you must publish a minimum of 8 to 12 strong, consistent episodes before you ask for a single dollar.
You have to prove yourself.
You are proving the concept, demonstrating reliability, and building a habit for the listener. The market simply does not pay for the promise of future content. It pays for a proven archive of value.
Okay, so when you cross that threshold and you are finally ready to sell, the instinct is to scrape an email database and blast out a media kit to, like, 3,000 random marketing managers.
Which is a terrible idea.
The playbook completely forbids this. The strategy is hyper-targeted. You identify exactly 25 tightly matched businesses, companies that are already spending money to reach this specific demographic listening to your show. And crucially, you don't pitch them a massive, risky annual contract.
You offer a pilot package.
Yes, a $500 to $1,500 pilot package. A flat fee for 4 episodes with strictly defined deliverables.
Right, keeping it manageable.
You are intentionally reducing the financial risk for the sponsor. You give them a low-stakes environment to test your audience's engagement. If you prove you can drive actual results, whether that's clicks, leads, or sales, you have all the leverage to convert that pilot into a long-term, high-ticket partnership.
And taking control of that direct sales process is vital, primarily because the alternative relies heavily on tech platforms, which introduces severe margin degradation. We need to examine the platform fee structures outlined in the report.
This is the hidden tax of the creator economy.
It is substantial. If you utilize Apple's built-in subscription tools, Apple takes a 30% cut of your subscription revenue in year one, dropping to 15% in year two.
30%?
Yes. And if you push into video and rely on YouTube's partner program for monetization, YouTube generally retains 55% of your long-form ad revenue.
That's wild.
Even the creator-centric platforms like Substack or Patreon take a 10% cut, and that doesn't even account for the credit card processing fees.
Okay, but if these platforms are taking anywhere from 10% to 55% of the revenue, why don't creators just pull their content completely? Why not just host the audio on a private server, put it entirely behind a hard paywall on a personal website, and keep 100% of the margins?
Because you run headfirst into the distribution dilemma.
Ah, right.
If you lock your content behind a hard paywall on an independent website, your discovery drops to near zero. Apple, Spotify, and YouTube function as massive global search engines.
Give them the discovery engine.
They are the public squares where listeners actually discover new material. You need their distribution networks to find the audience, but if you rely entirely on their monetization tools, you sacrifice your margins and your control.
It's like letting your landlord collect your paycheck, deduct an arbitrary fee, and then hoping they pass the rest of the money along to you. And what happens if the landlord decides to change the rules?
Well, your business vanishes. If your entire operation lives natively on Spotify and Spotify alters its algorithm or updates its payout structure tomorrow, you have no recourse.
Right.
This raises an important question about who actually owns the listener, and it leads to the playbook's ultimate operating principle for the modern creator. Distribute broadly, but centralize the business relationship. You put your content on every major platform because that's where the top of funnel discovery happens. But you aggressively funnel that attention toward assets you control. You own the email list, you own the website domain, you manage your own payment processor, and you hold the relationships in your own CRM. Never let a single tech platform become the sole owner of your distribution, your analytics, or your revenue.
So what does this all mean? When you distill all of these mechanics down, the structural inefficiencies of RSS feeds, the brutal realities of CPMs, the strategic value of B2B niches, and the platform fee traps, the playbook reveals that the ultimate asset is not your download count.
Not at all.
The ultimate asset is listener trust. Trust is the foundational element that makes every single one of those 12 revenue models function.
It's the core currency.
Yeah, without trust, a listener doesn't overcome the friction of leaving an app to join an email list. Without trust, you can't convince a subscriber to pay for a premium tier. Without trust, you cannot drive a highly qualified lead for a B2B sponsor. Trust is the engine of the entire ecosystem.
It is the only asset in this medium that actually compounds in value over time.
So, to you, the listener, this completely reframes how you should interact with the media ecosystem around you. Whether you're analyzing the creator economy from a professional standpoint, or maybe you really are mapping out your own highly specialized niche media empire, remember that the real product isn't the audio file. The MK3 is just the packaging. The real product is the trusted, durable relationship you cultivate with the audience.
And there's one final, larger implication from the playbook that I want to leave you to consider, drawn from revenue model number 10, IP licensing.
Oh yeah, let's hear it.
We spent this time dissecting ads, subscriptions, and corporate sponsorships. But the ultimate financial ceiling of your favorite narrative or investigative show might not have anything to do with audio revenue.
Where is the real windfall?
Well, consider the production costs. Audio is remarkably inexpensive to produce compared to film or television. Because the barrier to entry is so low, this medium has quietly evolved into a massive, low-cost testing ground for intellectual property.
Wow, really?
Yes. Creators are using RSS feeds to pilot characters, serialize storylines, test investigative journalism, and validate formats.
They are proving the market demand before they ever pitch a script to a studio.
Exactly. Once a story proves it can hold a listener's attention over 10 hours of audio, the risk for a studio drops significantly. That underlying intellectual property can then be licensed for multi-million dollar film adaptations, television series, or major publishing deals.
That makes total sense.
The audio series was never the end goal. It was just the proof of concept. So the next time you get completely absorbed in a gripping narrative series, consider that you aren't just consuming an independent production. You are participating in a massive real-time incubator for Hollywood.
Audio as the testing ground for Hollywood. That fundamentally changes how I view every new limited series that drops in my feed. It really highlights the illusion of the microphone, right? There's an incredibly complex, high-stakes economy operating right beneath our ears. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep analyzing the media landscape around you. Look past the raw download numbers, and we'll catch you next time.